Welcome to Took Talk, a video podcast by the band Took. We chat with the best in the music industry from yesterday and today with a focus on the good old days of Canadian rock. This episode originally streamed live on Tuesday, September 28th, 2021 on YouTube Live. Now, here are your hosts, Todd, Brent, Shane, and Corey.
All right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Took Talk, Tuesday at 2. And yes, it is episode 71 today.
Oh, my God. 71 weeks. Can you imagine? We would never have guessed that.
And this was supposed to be a two-week thing. You know, when COVID hit, we're like, well, we'll just do this for a couple of weeks, maybe a month at most.
COVID was supposed to be a two-week thing. It has not been.
That's what I'm saying.
No. Yeah.
But here we are. But
so we haven't talked to anybody or even each other since the we just did a trip to Nashville as a group.
Yes, we did. We had a private show in Nashville, and I'm sure you saw Todd's post and my post with Nielsen's five neck guitar.
Yeah. We play with Cheap Trick, which has been a lifelong dream of mine to be able to say. I remember saying that on stage, very sort of like kind of like, and lady, next up, Cheap Trick. Wow, I've always wanted to say that. Kind of like having them, like, wow.
I was disappointed, that he didn't go, I want you to want me.
You know that the story behind that is because they were in Japan, they were advised to speak slowly.
Because
it was Japan, it was kind of like, I want you, it was like that. This is the first song on our new album. It just came out this week, and the song is called Surrender. Like, there's a lot of those kind of, they become iconic, but then you go, oh, yeah, I guess he is sort of like, early days of American acts just showing up in Japan.
Yep. Wasn't that guitar something else, like five-neck guitar? I mean, we've all seen that growing up in the 80s on Guitar for the Practicing Musician or guitar player. And we actually got to put it on, and it weighs a lot.
It weighs like 60 pounds or something like that. The funniest thing about it is I just can't imagine that conversation when he presented it to the guys at Hamer. Like, so I want to do five necks on one guitar. They must have just been like, okay, that's hilarious. But no, I'm serious.
And, so it's a great gag and everything. But you think it would kind of like, okay, that's so heavy. And, it's like five sets of strings every time you restring the damn thing. You think it would have gone by the wayside, but he brings it out every single night.
It's a whole thing.
He doesn't really
too.
Wear it, though. He kind of wears it, and then he takes it off and drags it around the stage.
He did that. He did the night we play with him anyway, But I've seen him wear it he usually wears it for one song, kind of like as a goodnight kind of thing. But, it's realistically, I think the first three necks are the only ones that are really utilized because you can't even reach the bottom one, first of all. No. But at a certain point, it becomes kind of like, I think he generally just stays on the one neck anyway. But,
And the last neck, the bottom neck, is a... It's a fretless neck.
It's a fretless neck. That's right.
So imagine trying to play that, dragging your knuckles and being in pitch.
I know. And there's a 12 string, and I'm not sure what all the different guitars are on there, but it's all very strange. But a brilliant idea. It comes in its own case, which is a big monstrosity. It's something else for sure.
And I was happy to see that his guitar tech was one of my old guitar techs for Kelly Clarkson, Trace Foster.
Right. That's right.
Who actually went on after, I was kind of like, I built him up and I sent him out into the world.
You nursed him like a baby bird.
Yeah. He went on to do every Guitar Hero after that. The first.
No. Yeah, there you go. He was, he's been Joe Perry's tech for a long time. He was out when Fitz and I toured with Aerosmith 10 years ago now or something like that. No, probably like 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then he was Angus Young. So he's actually all my like childhood heroes, Joe Perry, Angus Young, Rick Nielsen, and Corey Churko, of course. Yeah, it's good company right there.
Yeah, it was really cool to see him. So thanks for giving us the tour of the guitars, Trace.
Hope to see
you again somewhere down the line. But when I was in Kelly Clarkson during those days, I had my regular guitars, but then I also had a full on Pro Tools rig that I was playing through, which was completely automated throughout the show. My mic was plugged into the Pro Tools rig, and as the show was playing along, my mic would turn on and off whenever I had to sing. So when I'm not singing, I'm not getting all this ambience and, you know, clouding up my mix.
Good idea.
Cool. And it worked pretty seamless. And I was doing a lot of keyboards and stuff at the time as well. So everything was like mission control. And poor Trace had to figure out how to make the thing work every week.
So what, when you were hired on for Kelly Clarkson, what exactly was your position? Because they had, weren't you hired as the fiddle player initially?
I was a violinist.
Sorry.
In this, yeah, no, it was, fiddlist? It actually was, yeah. So I was just off the road with Shania. I think I was, had been off for about 6 months and I couldn't get a gig. And now I'm living in LA. I have a house and I have house payments and the savings have kind of run dry. So I'm well, I guess that was the end of it. Now I'm, now I have to get a day job. So then I went around because I was an animator before, as you know, I went to like EA Sports, the video game company, and applied there. And then I also applied at Line 6, which was just down the road from my house.
Right.
Yeah. Just to be a product specialist or whatever, product manager. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I sent in my resume and they said, well, you don't really have the skills that we're looking for, but Kelly Clarkson's guitar player was just in and he said that Kelly wants two violinists on her tour.
Wow.
Can I recommend you to them? And so,
so if you hadn't gone in to, you know, apply for that particular position, you would have never
gotten a Kelly gig. So weird, right? Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. You just never know where life will lead you and what doors will open based on the actions that you do. You know, I would never have thought. So then I jumped on with Kelly and my first tour, all I did was play violin for five songs. And then I watched the show from the side. I think it was, I can't remember all the songs, but one of them was Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And the other ones, I think, were just string lines that she had on some of her recordings and stuff. So, yeah. So that's where I started as a violinist. And it was actually pretty weird because they put these charts in front of me. I had never read violin music before.
Oh, my God.
Kind of panicking because everything I usually do is by ear. I mean, I can read. I just haven't done it for a long time. I used to play classical piano in the old days.
Yeah, you and Fitz both read music. I'm not a. I'd be immediately like, just give me the record and I'll learn the parts.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, your ear training is impeccable because of it. A lot of classical players won't have any skills at ear training, and all they can do is read. So it's just a different set of skills that you use in your work.
Yeah, but Paul McCartney can't read music. So
is that right?
That's true.
Yeah.
And Paul McCartney can't
really get pretty good.
When I saw you with Kelly Clarkson we talked about this, remember last week? I don't know why we were mentioning, but I remember I told you I saw you play with her in 2006, maybe? I was on the road with Theory of a Dead Man, and between soundcheck and our gig, you guys were playing the arena or something next door. I went over. You were playing guitar that night, though. You had your Line 6 guitar, if I remember. Does that sound right?
So that would have been probably.
So I don't know if that was tour. Early.
That would have been the tour probably with Trace. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that amalgamate into?
I hadn't even met you.
We should probably even have this conversation with Jason.
Okay. So
you started off as a violinist.
Right, and then the second last show of the whole tour, her guitar player, she fired a guitar player on stage.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Mid show. Right.
What?
Interesting sidebar, that same guitar player is always on a CNN clip when the anti-vaxxers are attacking people in Nashville. He's one of the guys.
One
of the anti-vaxxers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
So he's still in entertainment, either way. He's entertaining me anyway.
Totally. Yeah, and they're always using that clip. Let's we need some controversy, some protesting. Let's put in the you know, Dwayne attacking a teacher or a parent or something going into a school meeting or something like that.
Hey, well.
Anyway, so he's fired on stage, and actually, it's on YouTube. If you YouTube, if you search Kelly Clarkson fires guitar player, you'll see.
Oh, really? Wow.
It's a very covert. She's on the mic, and the guy doesn't know he's about to get fired, and she's kind of like, we didn't even know it. She's talking covertly and she knows exactly what's going to happen after the show. So, check it out. I won't waste our time now, but,
wow.
So anyway, one show left in Vancouver, guitar player's fired. The music director, Jason Halbert, came to me and said, "Hey, I know you play guitar with Shania. Can you do the last show?" I'm like, "Yeah, hell yeah." And I'd already known like the arrangements and the blocking of the stage, you know, where I'm supposed to be or where he was. And but the thing was, in Vancouver, that was my hometown at the time, or it had been. So I was planning on visiting with all my friends, but instead I was in the dressing room shedding all these tunes,
wow,
right?
Oh, yeah.
But it went off without a hitch, and Kelly was blown away. And then the next tour, I became kind of that utility guy, keys, guitar, percussion, vocals, that sort of thing.
That's great.
So that's it in a nutshell. But our guest today actually also played with Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah.
And
did he get fired on stage? Just kidding.
He got fired on stage. No.
And just I don't know, kidding, Jason. Did you guys play together, Corey, or will we find all that?
No. So the reason why he was brought in was because I wasn't available. I was doing Shania in Vegas. I'm pretty sure. I can't remember exactly what year it was. I'm thinking it's probably 2012. He'll be able to tell us. And he filled in for me on a tour. So I never really got to meet him. I mean, we met, but we didn't get to know each other because obviously he was doing the gig. I was on another gig. But I feel like over the years, you know, we've seen each other on Instagram and all that stuff. And he's had his lifer gig. You know, I have my lifer gig with Shania. He's got his lifer gig with Alanis. Right, yeah, he's been with her like 17, 18, 19 years.
Wow, that's something crazy.
Yeah, I think 19 years actually.
That's awesome.
Yeah, should we bring him on or?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, without further ado, guitarist for Alanis. He played with Sarah McLachlan. He played with a lot of actual artists that are hard to spell their last names. I spelled them wrong. I had to go back and I was editing.
Natasha Bedingfield.
Exactly. How would you spell that?
That's just, I'm just going to say it, not spell it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Natasha and Sarah McLachlan, because you don't know, sometimes it's Mac, M-A-C, sometimes it's M-C, and sometimes it's G-H-I-N at the end, right?
McLachlan's one of those names that is, it's multiple spellings, of course, yeah.
Exactly. And then Morissette, of course, there's a lot of double consonants in there.
Yeah.
And which ones they are, well, who knows?
R's and S's and T's, probably, who knows?
Exactly. Without further ado, everybody, please welcome Jason Orme.
That was really entertaining. Just listening to you guys was really entertaining. I was kind of digging it. That was amazing. Nice to meet you, Todd and Brett. I know. I feel like you and I, Todd, have circled around each other with a lot of Vegas friends.
I think so.
And I've seen you singing and playing, and then Brent, I read that you're playing like drums and keys and everything. And then Corey's like when I got into the Kelly thing, the first thing I said was, "Oh, no big deal. You're just filling in for the guy that plays guitar and sings and plays violin." And I was like, "You guys know I don't play a violin, right?" And they're like, "No, it's good, you know."
Yeah, no, I know. Pressure. There's some of those gigs where it's like, "Are you sure you don't want three people to do this gig?"
Well, you guys are kind of, it's kind of like this, I don't know, is there something in the water in Canada? What's going on up there? Because Todd sings his ass off, and like,
well, thank you.
I know Corey sings. Brent, I'm guessing you probably sing.
Yeah, just from survival. It's the bars that we grew up in actually trained us to, where, you know, we're triple threats, we always say, because you had to sing. You had to play multiple instruments.
And to be honest, the winter, honestly, it just was so cold. You had to stay inside and just do stuff.
Yeah. I sing because my mom was in musical theater my whole upbringing. So like, she's like an operatic, like my friends on our, I grew up in a little Southern California small town called Simi Valley. That's very like suburbia.
Yep.
But my mom would get in the shower and truly like sing opera at the top of her lungs. So I'd be outside with all my friends knocking around on our bikes, and then they'd hear my mom and start going, "Oh," and like making fun of me. And, you know. So
that's hilarious. Actually, Shane isn't here today. He's our drummer, and he lives in Simi Valley.
You're kidding.
So, he lives, I'll tell you his exact address. It's,
we're exactly, what part of town?
We spend a lot of time up there as Tuke. I mean, honestly, we've recorded, we've made videos there. Yeah.
Yeah, he has a studio out there.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Everything leads back. It's really funny because I have friends, people talk about the area codes in Southern California. So I have friends from Simi Valley is technically Ventura County. You just cross over from LA County. So you, right. you go into the 805 area code. So okay. there's a drummer named Kurt Scara. Do you know Kurt?
The best.
No.
Who doesn't? Love Kurt. Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. He's from Santa Maria. So we have, you know, 805. And then the current drummer with Alanis, Victor, we knew each other in Simi Valley as teenagers. And wow. there was a roller rink. And in the late 80s, like, they would have a battle of the bands. And so I went to the high school on the west side, and Victor went to the high school on the east side. And back then, there's no internet. There's no, you know, you're 17, 18. You don't really know what's happening all over town. And then you get to this battle of bands, and they have a band in every corner of the roller rink. And you look across, and you're like, well, who are those guys? What? How did he get that guitar? Wow. And then I saw Victor in his band, and he saw me. And I was playing this guitar that I still have on the road. It's a Gibson Explorer. That was like my first good guitar. And when Victor joined the Alanis gig, when Victor joined the Alanis gig, he's like, you still have that? You've got to bring that on the road. And so it's that full circle. Like, we look at each other, and we're like, you know.
He remembered the Explorer from the roller rink? That's amazing.
Totally.
Yeah. I love it.
It's really funny. So it's this fun, like, you know, I mean, you know, I got it when I was 17 because I love the Scorpions. So I,
of course,
the guitar, you know,
That
was it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's a whole Simi Valley hang going on in the Alanis band now.
You know what? And it's funny. And it's probably Simi is a similar place, I would imagine, to what growing up in Canada was, minus the frigid temperature. But, but, you know, it's like, it's a place where you're kind of surrounded by the hills, and you guys know what it's like out there, and you grow up playing music out there, and there's kind of nothing else to do, really. So
yeah, of course,
a lot of good musicians.
Yeah, I imagine it's the kind of place where Hollywood seems like a million miles away, like anywhere else, really.
That's just exactly right. It's funny because my friend that I went to high school with, you know, you get into high school and you meet more musicians. And so I met this guy, Jay, and everybody said, oh, you know, Jay took lessons from Randy Rhoads. And I was like, you know, and that was just like, you're kidding. How did that happen? You know? And it turned out he would drive out to North Hollywood, and right at Laurel Canyon and kind of Oxnard was the Musonia, was Dolores Rhoads' school. They had a music school.
Wow. Right in Hollywood.
So, yeah. And so right in North Hollywood.
North Hollywood.
And so Jay, the story goes that he went in one day and they said, oh, Randy has joined Ozzy Osbourne's band. Here's your new guitar teacher, this guy, Craig. And that's who I started to go and take lessons with, too. We would drive out there from Simi Valley, and it seemed so foreign. Cut to, Craig plays a gig with his band at the Troubadour, and it was the first time I ever went to a club. So at 16, I was like at the Troubadour, when the Troubadour was like metal, like it not, you know.
Yeah.
It was the 80s. So
you could get into the Troubadour underage, right? That was one of the clubs you could get into underage.
You could drink. We used to go to the Troubadour. We used to go to the Troubadour at like 19 years old and just go up to the bar, long hair, and just go, all the Corona. And they, you know, and we were like,
no question.
Greatest thing in the world. No question. Same thing. Did you guys ever go to the Country Club?
Yeah.
Valley?
I played there a few times. That's classic.
Same thing. You could go in there and drink to your heart's content. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so fun.
When I was 17, I did my first trip to Los Angeles, and I went to the Troubadour, and they put you know, they ID'd me, and then they put a wristband on me that, you know, this guy can't drink or whatever. So I guess I didn't look old enough. But I remember I saw Paul Gilbert in the audience, you know, punching air. And I was like,
who did you go see?
Man. And his hair was all flat, right? And I was only used to seeing with Racer X with like the big hair. I'm like, that really looks like Paul Gilbert, but no, that can't be him. His hair's flat and he's punching air. He'd never do that.
Who was playing?
Who was playing? Yeah, who did you go see?
You know, I don't even remember. I don't think it was anybody.
Were you there on your own?
I was just there because, you know,
well, Paul Gilbert, like,
man, it's the Los Angeles scene.
Was it late 80s or 90s?
Yeah, it was 87.
Oh, okay.
And like I said,
that was a good
Paul
year.
Gilbert was there, and Craig Goldie was also there, and I got a picture with him after as well.
Wow.
It's funny you say celebrities. That first time I went to see my guitar teacher, the drummer from the Scorpions was there. Herman Rebell. I think I still have his autograph somewhere.
Amazing. And now, did you ever play there?
At the Troubadour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, my band, let me think. Not my first band. I think my second band. My first band played at the country club, and we ventured out a little bit. But yeah, but later we played at the Troubadour. Yeah, yeah.
It's funny great. Times.
It's, cool. It's funny, Michael, way? There's still a guy that works the door at the Troubadour that has been there for the duration.
Wow.
Every time I was just there doing a gig before COVID, and I walked in, I was like, wow, that guy's still here. It's amazing.
It'd be amazing if you learned like it was a really major like position, like he earns like, you know, $300,000 a year doing it or something.
Exactly. Like or like part he's part owner now or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's done his time.
You should have been a doorman. Damn.
Exactly. Yeah, we're the wrong business. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now you're on the road right now with Alanis, right? You guys are touring.
Yeah, we've been gone since August. We left August 8th.
Wow. And we went to Austin. I mean, that's great.
During all this.
And how's it been with COVID and everything?
Yeah.
It everybody that asks me, I say the same thing. It's great and totally weird.
Yeah.
Like it's because it's amazing because people are showing up. Like you walk out and we were all kind of clocking everybody that's on tour because her management handles Green Day.
Okay.
And Green Day, Weezer, and I think Fall Out Boy did like an Enormodome tour, like stadiums. Sure. And I know this guy, Jason Fries, that plays with Green Day. So he was posting on Instagram.
He's great.
The giant crowds. Yeah, he's amazing. And I thought, okay, well, either that's fine or it's a super spreader. I have no idea. Like,
yeah.
You know, and then Fall Out Boy's singer got it and they went off the tour for like 10 days or whatever it was, came back. Same with the Foo Fighters. I think the singer of Korn got it, came back.
Yeah.
Some people canceled everything, but we've just managed to, I mean, we keep saying today we're on tour. I mean, you know, the tour ends next week, but it's been great. We've had some crew people get it.
Right. Yeah. Has there been like limited meet and greets or anything like that? Like are you even able to bring friends backstage or is it fairly controlled?
No, the tour kind of collect, like right before we played the first show, it's us, Garbage, and do you know Cat Power?
That's
she's the opener. Yeah. It's really good. And Garbage, they're all so good. And like, everybody collectively kind of said, hey, wouldn't it be a good idea if we don't do after shows? Yeah. None of the bands are going to do meet and greets. Yeah. And let's keep it. Because all this news was coming in. It was like the beginning of August. And we were kind of like, we started rehearsals in July. So everybody was getting all the news about, okay, how is it going? And so we've had a couple little like, if there's family that someone has an old friend of mine I saw in Cincinnati and you know, you have people spread out everywhere. So we've managed to do a couple quick little outdoor, you know, masked and we also have guests send their vax card to the production.
I'm basically asking because me and a bunch of my beer league buddies would want to come down and hang out backstage with you guys if that's cool.
Come on, yeah. It'll be fine.
Hey, well, but you're here next week though. Jason, you're here next week in Vegas.
Talk in Vegas, right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You're playing T-Mobile. That's pretty freaking huge, dude.
That's huge. That's awesome.
And it's one of the only arenas. Like it's been all sheds except we did indoors in Nashville and Denver and T-Mobile and then Vegas. I think that's it, if I'm correct.
We played
Seattle, it was freezing out.
Oh really? Wow.
I did go to T-Mobile on Friday. I went to see Michael Bublé. And so what it is protocol wise, I don't know if it's each tour or what, but the building has the Clear app is you have to put all your information in like onto this thing and they kind of scan it before you go into the building. So I think that's what's going on. Like you got to be all cleared and vaxxed, whatever, before you get in the building.
Hey, go ahead.
I was going to ask, is Eric Avery playing bass for Garbage these days?
He is. Yeah. He was our bass player when I joined Alanis.
That's right. He's been around. I mean, Eric is I'm a huge fan of Eric, and he's one of those guys that doesn't get enough praise. All of those Jane songs that we remember, those first two albums, they're all bass guitar. Like if you listen to the songs, they're all built from the ground up on Eric's playing. And I don't know why I'm making this entire thing about Eric Avery, but here we go.
Trust me, I love Eric so much. The fact that he's on the tour has made me so happy because we really got to kind of reconnect and hang out a lot.
I forgot he was playing with Alanis. That's right. Yeah, he's great. He's really great.
He was one of the things that when I went to the audition, like we became friends, we're hanging out, and like, you know, there'd be little moments where like one day we were walking around and he said, you know, I kind of put a word in for you in the audition. I was like, you did?
Great.
It's like, yeah, you know, I just thought you seemed cool. And I told her, because he was already in the band. And I
right.
was, and in my mind, I'm going, Eric Avery put in a word for me, you know, because I'm like you, I'm a fan. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow.
And,
okay.
And then there was another day where she kind of sheepishly, I started at soundcheck playing Stop, you know, jink, 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 and he joined in. And like, you know, weeks later, I was like, remember that day at soundcheck? And he joined in. He goes, yeah. I go, I felt like, you know, Chris Farley, and that's, you know, that
yeah, exactly.
That was really cool. Awesome. You know, like, yeah, it was awesome. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, he's been doing garbage off and on for a long time now. And I, garbage is one of those positions. The bass player position is always kind of like that other guy, you know what I mean? But it's like, it's such a cool gig. I'm a big fan of that. Shirley's a star, and Butch and Duke and those guys do great shit.
Amazing. They're so, and they're so nice. Like,
nicest like, people. Mm-hmm. They're like the Madison, nicest. Wisconsin nice.
Exactly. Yeah. And here in
Eric, the garbage guys were big on the Line 6 stuff way back when. Are they still always digital? On
that. They're all straight. Yeah. Like, they're a lesson in that. Like, they're all on Helix, electronic drums. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the cleaner stage, drums too. Right? Nothing on stage. No amps. It's just like.
No amps.
It looks pretty cool. Yeah.
It's a clean stage.
Yeah.
Clean stage. We're like that too, basically. But.
Are you?
Sort of. There's a bass amp on stage and live drums behind the fishbowl. But. The other guitar players still got a cabinet just behind the stage. I started using, I have amps, but I started using those Captor X from the company called Two Notes. It's kind of like the UA aux box. I probably shouldn't say that because they're, you know.
Right.
But it's like another version of that, but it's more roadworthy. Like the aux is more, I think, studio piece of hardware, where these look like little, you know, they're about this big. And but the same thing, you get the app and you can see the cabinet in the app and you can place the mics and choose from, you know.
That's whatever. Really cool. So
let me ask you this.
You're using real app, but not real speakers.
As guitar guys, are you guys, somebody was just telling me the other day how you can take.
Oh, that's an old shot.
Whoa. Is it twice as big now?
No, it got a little smaller.
Because I was learning a dance routine to work all that.
No, that's that was like. That was back 2000, I don't know, 12 maybe.
Impressive. I see the Line 6. What's the green delay pedal thing?
Green delay, yeah.
Yeah. The DM4? The DM4?
Here, maybe I think there's a recent picture. Here, I'll find a photo of the recent one.
Send it to
me. Let's see.
I'll put it up.
Hold on.
While you're looking, I wanted to ask Corey.
Yeah.
Someone was just recently telling me, and you guitar guys can talk about this, about how they if you are modeling things, you can model, like, you know, your J45 acoustic guitar and then trigger with my electric guitar on stage. Is that really a thing?
Well,
you know what I'm saying.
Like, so technically, what I was telling you about was this Fishman Aura pedal. Which is for acoustic guitars to make them sound better when you plug them in.
Right.
And so what you can do is send your acoustic to Fishman and they make a digital imprint of it, or a model, or what do they call them?
Basically a profile or whatever. Yeah.
Basically a profile.
Yeah.
And then they put it inside this little pedal and send you your guitar back. Thank goodness. And so that when you play, your guitar, when it's plugged in, it sounds more like it's on a microphone, right?
Interesting.
So technically not your electric guitar making it sound like acoustic. It's your acoustic sounding better than
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
There's also the piezo pickup thing that when I was playing, I did some gigs with Vertical Horizon, and they were big on that with the Paul Reed Smith, and they would put the piezo thing, and you'd have like a stereo cable out of the guitar, and you could actually, did sound like an acoustic.
Those are pretty convincing.
I was surprised, and I'm pretty picky about how acoustics sound live. And
Pete Townsend has something like that in his Strat, and it always sounds pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it could depend on your sound guy. It could depend on, speaking of sound guys, Corey, we have Sully out with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
He's Shania's. Yeah.
There
you go. And he's about to go out with Rage, I think, after us.
Okay.
Rage is going back out.
Because he was
crazy.
Also the sound guy for the Red Hot Chili Peppers for forever.
Oh, right.
as well, but maybe they're not doing anything right now. But I was just going to say this
they're
is another
a record, Todd.
It's a Line 6.
Oh, the Line 6 guitar. Yeah, they actually
which actually has acoustic models in it.
Oh yeah,
and it has a Line 6 guitar.
Different guitars and stuff.
Doesn't it also
it's
have like
really convincing too?
Isn't it also like sitars and banjos and all kinds
of crazy sitar, banjo, dobro.
That's insane.
That's the guitar story you were playing when I saw you with Kelly Clarkson the first time.
Was it? Yeah.
Right.
Well, it was a great guitar to have because it does a lot of different tricks.
Yeah.
Without having to keep changing guitars throughout the show, you know, it'll even do alternate tunings as well.
Yeah. Right.
And you can pick the tunings here and
it's quite
drop
awesome.
D and slide tunings, blues.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, like when you think about what they're going to be doing with that stuff in 10, 20 years from now, it's going to get pretty nuts.
Yeah.
I'll probably by then we'll all go back to like just plugging in like Malcolm Young and go, to hell with it, you know.
Exactly. I wish that's how it was.
Yeah, but do you have one of these? Do you have one of these, Corey? You have one of these, the Vox Apache with the built-in. Hang on a second.
Oh, that's awesome, Todd. Where'd you get that?
Built-in speaker.
You don't even need an amp with that guitar.
It has this.
Oh. That sounds like Kiss. That sounds like Rock and Roll All Night.
Let's write a song with that.
I totally forgot I had that. I didn't forget about it, but it was in my storage unit. I was like, oh, this is, it has like a built-in drum machine. I just like, because I've always been obsessed with the teardrop guitar, and I thought, that's the coolest thing ever. I picked it up, and it went, gah, doo, doo, gah. I was like, oh, wow, this will annoy all my friends.
You can play about a dozen Kiss songs with that groove.
Well, you could actually, you know, there's other beats, and I can adjust the speed. I can play pretty much anything, really.
Right.
Let's play Zeppelin 1 through 4, really sillily. But yeah, no, anyway. So let's hear the how long have you been with Alanis now?
In
She's
November,
Canadian, you know.
I've heard. It'll be 20 years in November.
Oh my gosh. That's like you and Corey. Corey's been with how long has it been with Shania?
97, December 97.
Whoa, you beat me. So, that's amazing.
That's a long time.
I didn't know you were with her that long. Wow, that's amazing.
That's when I played my first gig. David Letterman show, December 97.
Wow.
That's funny. I started in the same way. Like I got the gig and they were like, okay, she just made a record. We're going to go on a promo tour. And I was like, what does that mean? Well, you're going to do every TV show and, you know, known to man. I was like, oh, okay. And, you know,
yeah. That's cool.
So okay, it says a lot about you and it says a lot about Alanis as well that, you know, she's kept people around that long and you were, you know, very valuable to her to keep around for that long. And the loyalty is just insane. It's great to see that.
Same with Shania. Yeah. It's you know, some people have come and gone for just whatever reasons they wanted to come and go. And I've always just said, well, if she keeps calling and I'm around, I'm happy to be there, you know? And she's, she's also great. Like she's just couldn't be better to work for.
She seems awesome. Yeah.
You know, are there any other Canadians in the band?
There was a Canadian that you guys probably know named Vincent Leslie Jones, who used to be in a band called The Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, yes.
Apparently was a popular band in...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Vince is the best.
He played with us. He's like... And he's a dear friend now, too. But he was... he did the tour cycle we did back like in 2008 and 9. And he was also the reason I ended up doing some gigs with Sarah McLachlan, because he was playing with her.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But another countryman... Of yours.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's living in the US now too, I believe. I don't know what
he's in LA, yeah. He's in the Valley.
And
does a lot of he's doing a lot of TV stuff now and he does the music for I'm gonna forget the name. Not Blackish, Grownish.
Oh, good.
It's an offshoot of
Yeah, no, it's great. That's a really funny show actually. Anthony Anderson's in that. I was gonna say when way back, my band was opening for Sass Jordan, a Canadian artist. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but her drummer was Taylor Hawkins from Foo Fighters. And Nick Lashley was the guitar player.
And I think even Chris Chaney played bass, right? Wasn't he from her thing?
He may have, but he wasn't there when I was there. So,
oh, okay.
But they had both kind of like, yeah, you know, we're going on to play with this Alanis girl. And Alanis in Canada had been a teenage pop singer, as I'm sure you're familiar, you're aware of. And to us, we were like, oh, okay. You know, I was like, that seems strange to me, but okay. You know, and then, you know, and then like, you know, within 6 months, you know, that Jagged Little Pill record was the biggest record on the planet. Yeah. And I was like, wow, dude, I did not see this coming. And then, of course, Taylor goes on to be a Foo Fighter and everything else. But
right.
No, it's been really awesome watching her career really steamroll like that. Like, and then eventually, like, just sort of taking full control of her career and doing exactly what she wants to do rather than sort of, you know, getting spit out the bottom of this pop machine. She seemed to be kind of like, nah, I'm going to do this now. You know, I've always appreciated that about her.
Me too. I think that's really a good take on it, too. I feel like she's just kind of been like, well, I could do what everyone sort of thinks is the thing I should do, but I kind of want to do what I want to do. And but it's actually, it's fascinating to me because as I talk to you guys, I'm realizing I've never talked to any Canadians about what the perspective was from, like, were you guys really aware of her being like this popular teen pop
person? Well, yeah, before the music, there was the TV show, right, Todd?
And she was on. She was on a television show. I don't think I was that aware of that, or I would have made that connection. But she was on Universal, and we were on Universal, so I was aware of, or some Universal affiliate, whatever. And she came to a sound check of our band once when she was very young, you know, and thought of, she was just that young girl who's a, you know, way more successful in the business than we are, and and she in a very pop kind of thing. So. But I think it's also another great example of somebody who, like, you know, if we were all to be defined by what we were doing when we were 17 years old, can you imagine? You know, it's like that it would be totally different. So I think the fact that she was able to kind of go, yeah, no, I mean, Jagged Little Pill was such a radical departure in terms of, like, just making her own music. And what a perfect moment of, you know, that epic timing to have just kind of, like, landed that right there and then and really connect with such a wide audience. Yeah. Super impressive.
Might still be the biggest selling debut. What's the title of it? Like that it's like record?
Multiple diamond or something like that.
It's ridiculous. Huge. Yeah. I don't think it's ever going to be touched. 24 million or something for a debut.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. I see. It's funny because you see a lot of different stats, but recently I feel like I saw something about the biggest selling records, and it was really high up in the all time sort of, you know, pantheon of biggest selling records. You go like, wow.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Kind of crazy to think how big it was. I remember hearing You Ought to Know on K-Rock in LA, and it was really like, what the hell is this? Like, it was just it was so different at the time.
It's like Flea on bass, isn't it? Yeah, isn't that Flea on? Yeah. And I don't know who else is playing.
I think song. Navarro was on guitar.
Matt Logg.
No way.
Matt Logg.
Matt Logg. Yeah. I recently did a gig with Matt Logg. He's such a nice guy. I finally met him and played with him a little bit on this one thing I did, and what a nice guy.
The nicest.
And you know, he plays with Mike Campbell.
Is that Mudcrutch? Yeah.
Or the Dirty Noms.
That's it.
They're great.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he played with Slash. He was in the Snake Pit.
He was in the Snake Pit. Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
And do you do that, Todd? Are you in the Snake, or were you in the, you're in Snake Pit?
No, we're Fitz and I both play in the Conspirators with him. Like,
oh, okay.
12 years.
Basically post Velvet Revolver.
Yeah.
And that's with, is that Miles Kennedy singing?
And Miles Kennedy, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Corey also toured with us, too.
Corey filled
that tour with them.
Oh, I saw the picture. Yeah.
That's
right.
And Shane, our drummer, also sat in as well when Brent awesome. Detached his retina in his eye and had to leave the tour.
Oh, my God.
It's always
basically, sad. As you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree gig-wise, right? It's funny.
It's who you know. It's who you know.
Right. True.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Who's playing the Iceman in the Tuke intro that I just saw?
Oh, that's me.
Don't you have one on your wall, Todd?
There's one right there. Or is it?
Oh, man. That's the guitar that, like, forever I've wanted forever. Just from, like, being a Kiss fan. Just from being a Kiss fan as a kid and, like...
I know. There was...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. I want to hear your...
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I remember when Paul Stanley started playing some other, like... Washburn version or something, and I was like, come on.
I know.
And then, then he went back, and now he's back to, you know.
It was never quite right, was it? You're like, it's always been my favorite shape of a guitar. Like a lot of other guys, that dude from System of a Down, he has a model, and a few other guys actually have Iceman models, but it'll always be Paul Stanley to me. Which he doesn't call an Iceman, he calls it a PS10, and he'll correct you. By the way,
I imagine so. It's a funny story. Oh, go ahead, Brent.
I just want to say, what's the useless trivia? Before Paul Stanley, who actually was the signature model in a wood grain finish of that guitar?
Steve Miller.
Correct.
Yeah, Steve Miller used to play the
wood
grain brown.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a weird looking.
You could probably look up some ads for it.
I listened to a podcast with Steve Miller, and he talked about, like, back in the day, nobody giving them any love for guitars, and Ibanez, like, hooked him up, and he was like, fine, we're playing Ibanez, you know. And
I listened to that, too. That was Mark Maron. Yeah, I heard that.
Yes, it was Maron. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a funny story about – oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, tell your story.
Well, the Iceman thing is funny because you were talking about Paul Gilbert, and do you guys know Jeff Bowders, drummer?
I know that name.
LA guy.
Yeah.
He's played with Paul a bit in the last few years, but Paul has
the huge Ibanez guy.
Well, and he has the reverse Iceman that is called the Fireman,
I have that here somewhere, but I don't think it's in this room. Yeah,
it's a super cool guitar. Yeah,
it's a kooky guitar. Yeah,
it's so cool. And so, for me, I was like, well, what a genius name! Like, that's perfect. And then Jeff goes, the funny thing about the name is Paul didn't come up with it. Some guy, some fan or somebody goes, oh, you should call it, because he was trying to figure out what to call it. And somebody said, oh, you should call it the Fireman. And he said Paul was like devastated that he didn't think of that. Like, like, how did I not think to call it the Fireman? Of course, that's what it's called.
Yeah, I had to buy that too. It was like another one of those things where I saw, that's a crazy looking guitar. Pick it up, plug it in, play it. The neck's great on it. I don't know.
Right.
And then I just kind of like, ah, damn it. Those are one of those things where you're like, I don't need to spend more money today, but guess what? We're going home with another guitar.
Exactly.
As you can see.
Yes.
I think everybody here has been on Everyone Loves Guitar. Is that right?
Yeah.
Greg, yep. Yeah.
Greg, yeah, he's the best.
Were you as well, Brent?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the nicest guys in the world.
I was listening to yours this morning. And I was listening to yours. And there was a great story of you, how you got the Alanis gig. The audition process was like over almost a week or something.
I need to hear that. I got to hear about this. I love the backstory on how, what happens in the room, or you get the phone call, what goes down. I love hearing this.
You didn't really want the gig, right? You were kind of like doing a...
Well, the story...
In other ways.
Yeah, I was kind of... Well, I was working, and then work was getting slow. And the story is that actually one of my oldest friends, this guy Joel Shearer, had joined Alanis' band in like 97, I want to say, after one of the guys, Jesse, was playing guitar, left. And so Joel got the gig. But Joel had played on a song called Right Through You on her first record. And you were talking about the whole unknown thing. Like, we've known each other so long that it was like maybe one of the first real sessions he ever did for a record label. And I remember him calling me, and he goes, man, I did a session today. And I was like, really? Wow. What was it like? You know? And he goes, I don't know, some Canadian artist, but you know, and then lo and behold, the record blows up and it turns out it's Alanis Morissette. We're like, you played on that record. That's crazy. And so cut to 2001 and he calls me up and says, hey, I got fired. And I was like, what? And he goes, well, she's changing the whole band. It's a long story. We're still on good terms. I'm putting your name in to go audition. And he would call me from time to time from the road and say, hey, so-and-so's auditioning for, you know, a touring thing. Do you want to go? And I was always like trying to sort of, I'm kind of a band guy. Like, I wanted to have a band and be, you know, write songs and be successful and do that. Right. But I also started doing this cover band thing that you probably know of in Vegas, the Boogie Nights and the Spasmatics and all that stuff.
Well, I saw you, Jason, back in the day.
Oh, is that right? Oh, that's crazy. So I've been doing that since the 90s because it's amazing money and really fun. Yeah. And the musicians are some of my best friends and great musicians, on and on. So that was going so well and I was making so much money doing that and I could stay home and do my own band sort of
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So I always was turning down these ideas of auditions he would send me because I'd go, how much does it pay? And he'd go, then. And I'd go, maybe not. So then things had slowed down. He called me, told me this Alanis story. And I honestly, two things. I said, well, that seems weird. I don't want to go take your job. Like, are you sure? We're like friends. This seems weird. No. You should go. And then I thought, I was in my 30s and I had never been to Europe. And I was like, well, I'd probably get to go to Europe and I don't know. Yeah. That would be fun. And I had no sense of what being kind of like a quote, finger quote, side guy musician really was. I just had no idea. So, so they sent us three songs to learn and I went down and they had my friend Zach on keyboards already and Eric was already on bass. So they were auditioning two guitar players and a drummer. So I played with a guy the first day. And by now, I used to have long hair, like kind of like, you know, curly. Like, it's funny, Corey, when I met you, you had shorter hair. And then when I saw you grow your hair out, I was like, I wonder how long it would take me if I wanted to grow my hair. Because my hair just grows out, you know, it's like it takes forever. Yeah.
An awkward stage when your hair is curly, for sure.
Dude, it's just like a giant, you know, anyway. So, yeah, pretty much. So I get there and there's another guy across from me that had really long hair and a bright green, like ESP sort of SG kind of guitar, but like fluorescent green.
Okay.
Fail.
And I was like,
fail.
But I didn't know. Like, I walked in with a Les Paul and I brought like this matchless amp I had, but they also had a Marshall, and I was like, I'll plug into the Marshall, fine. And I was super nonchalant kind of, because I just was like, well, they either want that or me. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
No idea. Did the audition. She wasn't there yet. Then they said, great, thanks for coming. I go home, and I was living with a girlfriend at the time, and she said, how'd it go? I go, I think it went okay. I don't know. And I get a phone call around 6 p.m. Hey, Jason, thanks for coming. We wondered if you could come tomorrow, Saturday. Alanis is going to come down. And I didn't realize that they wanted me to play with this other guy, Dave Levita, who wound up getting the gig with me. They wanted to hear us together. So he's there. We play together. It's another drummer. Thanks. Awesome. I go home Saturday night, get the call again. Hey, Jason, thanks so much. Wondering if you could come down tomorrow. Alanis had another guitar player she wanted to hear and wondered if you'd come play too. And I was like, okay. And I come down the next day and it's Jennifer Batten.
Oh, wow.
Guitar player.
Yeah.
And I grew up working at this music store where I grew up in Simi Valley. My whole like teen years into my 20s, I worked at this guitar shop. So we had clinics and all these different people would come in, and she did this amazing clinic, like mind-blowing guitar player.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Jennifer Batten played guitar for Michael Jackson. She was kind of a legend, really. I mean,
legend
world for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I walk in, she's there, she's kind of wearing her guitar up here and she's playing, and I'm kind of like, again, I have no idea, but wow, I just played with Jennifer Batten. That's kind of cool. And I got another day with Eric Avery. I'm a Jane's fan. That's cool.
Yeah, totally.
Fine. So, but now it's the third day and I get home again and they didn't say anything. They just said, thanks a lot. You know, we'll let you know. And
weird.
And my girlfriend's like, what is happening? And so by the third day, I was like, I don't know, but it's like, now it's nerve wracking. And so then the next day I get the call again. Hey, can you come down Monday? And sure. And I come down and this time the tour manager at the time met me in the parking lot and said, hey, so we'd like to offer you the gig. And if that's okay, you know, with you, if you, it's yours. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And today, and then he said, today we're going to check out some drummers. And so we played with a few drummers and that was it.
That's so funny. It's kind of like going on a bunch of dinners with some girl and like, is this a thing? Or like, what are we, you know,
what are we doing? What's
where do we see this going?
Exactly.
Spinning my wheels. Yeah.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
That's a great story. I got a picture here of the, let's see here. Hang on 1 second.
Uh-oh. We should always be nervous when there's a picture.
That's me.
Oh, that is Spaz.
That is me.
Oh, yep. There he is.
There I am. That's Lewis. That's my alter ego.
The Spazmatics character. Yeah. Those guys are all like, that's the LA Spaz, right? So that would be a lot of the Roxanne guys played in that.
You're right. The drummer is Roxanne. And then Doug played in Roxanne a little bit. Doug lives in Vegas now, the bass player.
Yeah, he's a Vegas guy. Yeah. Yeah.
But comes to LA.
Explain to the listeners who don't know what Spazmatics is.
So Spazmatics grew out of a company called Perfect World Entertainment that does, they started with the Boogie Nights, which was kind of dressing up in 70s, like vintage 70s costumes and playing all discos hits, right? Yeah. And so it was super popular in the 90s. Late 90s. And one of my dear friends who now passed away, this friend of mine, Matt, that grew up in the town over from me, used to come to the music store. Matt Chindy. Did you know Matt?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's the best.
Yeah. Greatest. One of the greatest guys ever. So I knew Matt from teenager time. So he would come in the store a lot. And then finally, he was doing this and making a good amount of money as a musician. And I thought cover bands were like, I have to play four sets a night and make $50.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'd never even entertained the idea. And then when he told me how much money they made, and then I went to see it and I saw how much fun it was, and it kind of, like, growing up around an actor family with my mom and being in some of the shows when I was a kid, I was like, oh, I get it. This is like comedy and acting, and you get to act out every silly Jimi Hendrix, you know, fantasy ever and just goof off and, like, you know, maybe drink a little bit, maybe whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And, so it just, I was able to quit my day job basically and become
a musician. Fascinating thing about Perfect World, because I've known Jamie a long time.
Yeah.
It starts as a gag, as far as I know.
Totally.
But it becomes so popular that they start getting, you know, asked if they can play, you know, and it's like, well, but we're already playing that night. Then they get the idea, well, what if we got some other guys to dress up and be a, you know, another version? So then all of a sudden there's like two versions booked, then three, yep. Then there's now in this day and age, there's a LA Spasmatics, there's a Las Vegas Spasmatics, there's a Chicago Spasmatics. I don't know about Boogie Nights so much, but they, I said to somebody at one point, I said, someone should be making a documentary about people that make a living. And you can literally, I'm sure, Jason, you've done it, where it's kind of like, hey, can you go out and fill in for the Chicago Spaz? And boom, you yep. fly out there. They're playing pretty much the same set. And you mm-hmm. just step right in and you play with those guys, or Utah yeah. or where Salt Lake or wherever they happen to be. And it's a genius business model. And it's made Jamie a very successful man, you know.
No doubt about it. And I've got some of the musicians that come out of it, I mean, like,
oh, yeah,
some of the earliest gigs I did were like Ray Luzier on drums, you yep. know. I've met Ray doing that. I met, like,
Ray's, you know, in Korn now, for those who don't know.
Yep.
Jeff mm-hmm. Scott Soto would be floating around in that whole
me
camp.
And Jeff, it's funny, when I started doing gigs with Jeff, I said, you know, man, I saw you at the country club with Yngwie. And he goes, you didn't just see me at the country club with Yngwie. You saw my first gig ever with Yngwie. I was like,
whoa.
I had no idea, you know.
Wow.
And here we are later. And the other thing that was funny was Roxanne. So I used to go to the clubs and see bands, but I was picky. Like I wanted to see bands that I liked the songs and on and on. So, sure. But Racer X was a really fun band to go see, because
sure, yeah.
it was like Judas Priest, but with guitar players that could just blow your mind. And then Roxanne, I happened to be at the Troubadour one night, and Roxanne got up and, like, they were just jamming and kind of goofing around, but then they would do Zeppelin and just sound so incredible, because DL, the drummer, is like,
yeah,
just Bonham, like, he's amazing. And so
monster.
Me and my friend that were sitting there, you know, drinking our, you know, underage beers, were going like, who the hell are these guys, you know?
yeah.
And so I knew of them. And what's funny is I started talking about how great that band was, and Matt Chidji went to see them, and he was like, you're right, they're amazing. And he made friends with them. I never did. I never even met them. And Matt started, like, mixing them and recording with them and doing all this stuff. And then when it turned into the Boogie Nights, he started doing that. And, like, and by then, 10 years later, whenever it was that I, you know, started doing it, it was this full circle thing. It was kind of weird.
Matt was incredible at that. Like, Matt really was the front guy, in a sense, for Spasmatics.
Right.
Like, he did
right.
all the talking, and he was mm-hmm. absolutely one of the most naturally funny people I've ever known.
Yeah. He was one of the best. Like, I've never seen, when they had his memorial, we were at the Canyon Club in Agoura, and it was like people overflowing out the door. It was like 1,000 people there, and we were all playing music, and, you know, it was like this crazy night of, you know, that was one of the craziest experiences. Like,
yeah, it was brutal, dude. Like,
yeah.
I ended up filling in, because I was sort of floating around that world, but not really in it. But I remember filling in for, you know, cause a lot of the Vegas guys had to go out for,
right.
for Matt's memorial.
Yeah, that's brutal, right. You know? That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It still exists. It still exists. Spasmatics is at South Point Saturday nights here in Vegas every week. You know?
I've done that gig a bunch with those guys.
Spasmatics, but isn't there like a theme where you guys play like pop songs from the past, whatever?
It's like 80s. So it's all 80s.
mm-hmm. 80 cool. stuff, and it's all like a really adrenalized, like yeah. twice as fast and that kind of stuff. Is that?
Yeah. It's all, yeah, it's kind of more, yeah, like you could take it and kind of make it a little more rock and roll guitar. And it's kind of what they did with the disco stuff too. It sort of got a little bit of a rock flavor to it. And I think what happened was the audience for the disco thing kind of grew up. And then the next generation that came up, because they were always trying to do an 80s thing, but then when they had the idea for nerds, you know, dressing up and playing, and they got the right guys together. And then it was funny. I did a couple of gigs when I first got the Atlantis gig, and it wasn't going anywhere really. And by the time I got off my first long run with Atlantis, those guys had built it into a thing that was just blowing up and getting really yeah. popular.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of funny.
I was
Steel Panther was grown out of that whole thing too.
Sorry,
who's that?
Sorry, again.
Steel Panther grew out of that whole thing too initially, but they kind of you know went on their own thing.
Yeah, they went on their own, but yeah, that Ralph. It's funny. Me and Ralph and Ray. Ralph was the singer. Yeah. We were flying to New
That's
York.
That's where I saw you, Jason. Like House of Blues,
no
Hollywood.
Way.
I moved That's there in '96, so I would have saw way. All the Boogie Nights gigs. I saw the first Metal Shops at the Viper Room, you know, with Ray and,
yeah.
and it was Jeff Scott Soto sometimes on vocals or Ralph singing yeah. the Boogie Nights, right?
Right. Yeah.
And the bass player was in Van Halen tribute too.
Oh, so Joe if Lester. You Joe Lester, well, he was at the Viper yeah. Room, so the version at the Viper Room was called Booty Quake.
Were you in that?
Yeah. And I did that a lot. Yeah.
Oh, I saw you all the Russ, time.
Well, yeah. Russ, sorry, Satchel.
Yeah.
But Russ, you know, he was the He's guitar Vegas guy there. Now. He's yeah. Vegas guy now. That's right. Yeah. And he, so he and this guy, John, who actually is a songwriting partner with me in LA now, but amazing singer. But he was the singer. Joe was the bass player. Max on drums, who lives in Vegas now as well. But Russ and John had that thing that Ralph and Russ have now, that comedy, like there's some stories of those guys.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. There was a summer I filled in. We call it the glory summer. It was like 96 or 7 where Russ broke his finger and I had to fill in for like 2 months. And we were playing 5 nights a week all over. It was, I caught pneumonia at the end of it. I was so like, oh, yeah, but it was like some of the most fun.
I remember there were some funny stories because when Boogie Nights was really happening back here, they all ended up like with full rock star problems, you know, like multiple houses and rehab and the whole thing. Yeah. Like we're talking like they're making so much money as at the height of this thing, they were like having all kinds of like all the best things about it and the worst things about being that successful.
It's probably true. Yeah.
I love those guys. They're the best.
It all comes with it. There's a funny story of Russ at the Viper Room because they would get all these guys on stage, you know, different musicians would come through. And I think it was Carmine Appice got on stage with them one night and they did, you know, of course, like a Crazy Train or something. And Russ is in full disco character being a smart ass. And they finish and Carmine's walking off the stage. He goes, yeah, man, you stick with it. You're going to get there someday, man, or something, you know, like some.
That's so typically Russ, isn't it?
Okay, I want to show another picture here, but just before we do that, quick question for you. Mm-hmm. Is it Ventura Boulevard or Ventura Boulevard?
Ooh, that's a really slight.
You're a native.
Aren't they both
native of California? So I want to know what the native
is. I say, if I was to tell you, go to Ventura Boulevard, Ventura. Which one did I say? Ventura.
You said T. Ventura. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you said the T, Ventura Boulevard. Yeah.
Oh, what's the other one?
Ventura,
like a cha. Oh no, Ventura. Yeah. T.
Ventura. Okay.
What? Sorry, what? It's a T. Okay.
I say T. Yeah.
Well, and I think most locals say T as well, and I think that's obviously the correct pronunciation. But
right,
of course, we all know who said Ventura Boulevard.
Tom Petty.
No.
Tom Petty.
Yes. Yes. Tom Petty. He's the one that taught the world how to say it.
Interesting. I never thought about that. He kind of does. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I came down, people Boulevard. Were saying Ventura.
Yeah. Ventura Boulevard. It's kind of his like sort of
has that lazy kind of
Freudian draw.
Well, because you say dentures, I suppose.
Ah, good point.
And even the word adventure, or even the group The yeah. Ventures, you know what I mean? It's like there's, you know,
Ventura.
It's not the wow, Ventures.
Yeah. See, you guys, now I'm not going to be able to look at the word Ventura on a sign and not think about this. I'm going to be at a stoplight every day going,
Ventura. Damn you, Ventura. Corey.
Ventura. 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 Yeah. Is it Tuke or Chuke?
Tokyo. Yeah.
Tokyo.
Torque. Yeah.
Torque.
Okay, here's the picture.
We've got them all.
Please explain this picture.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
There's some Rolling Stones in that photo.
There are some Rolling Stones. And me trying to straighten my hair, I think, at that point. Yeah, that 2005.
Wow. Oh, really?
So we...
I don't know. It still looks curly to me.
It is, kind of. It's still kind of curly. There's a funny story about this, actually. She, by the time she said yes, because the Stones go on tour and they pick different openers for different parts of their tours, I guess, because I've talked to so many friends now that have said, like, oh, we got to open three shows too. And so we luckily got to do three shows, not only in New York, but so the first show was at MSG, Madison Square Garden, then a day off. Then we played Giant Stadium on the day of my 39th birthday.
Mm. Wow.
And met Keith Richards that day.
Come on.
Like,
that's cool.
Like, ridiculous day.
Yeah.
And then the third show was up in northern, up in Albany.
Did you immediately say, hey, it's my birthday? To try and
Keith, it's my birthday. Did you know? Yeah. Sure, you know.
I would have.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was funny. She, by the time we did it, she goes, or I think it was before she said yes. She told the band one day, oh, yeah, the Stones asked us to open, but I turned them down. And the whole band, I think, collectively went, what? You know, like, we were like horrified. And she went, oh, did you guys want to do it? And we're like, yeah, you know. And I think the opportunity came back and, you know, she was like, said yes.
Well, the guys will like it. The guys want to do it. So
maybe. She was very gracious about it, I think, you know. But yeah, so we got to do three shows opening for the Stones. It was one of the most surreal.
Hey, Rob Orm says he has that picture in his living room.
That's my brother.
He's watching.
There you go.
That's my bro. Hi, Rob. That's awesome. That's the guy that played me every record that got me going, man. My brother's about 10 or 11 years older than me and was playing Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and Beatles and, you know, handed me every piece of vinyl that I still have. And yeah,
that's amazing. Impressive. Yeah. It's always nice having that older brother, especially when it's that kind of time, like space difference.
Yeah.
That much older. Then he's like that much deeper into the tunes. Yeah.
Well, and it was really that specific time in the 70s where I got to hear all that stuff. And then found my own way into, like, you know, one of the first record I bought was Kiss Destroyer. So it was like, that was the first thing that was like, okay, this is my thing, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, but that, yeah, that's the first, that's, Cedric there with the Clash shirt on is still our bass player. So
is
right after Eric split, Cedric joined the band and,
cool.
Yeah.
If you told me this was a picture from Madame Facade's wax museum, I would believe you.
That's what everybody says. That's exactly how it looks. It's the funniest thing. And the funniest thing about this, I remember this because when we first got on the tour, we were told, like, hey, you know, and this is before iPhones, right? It's so weird to think, but everybody had like a digital camera and, you know. So they very specifically were like, by the way, you know, if you run into the Stones, you're going to get a photo at the end. So don't ask for photos or anything if you don't mind. And we were like, of course, of course. And so we did run into each Stone as the week. It was like a week of time that we spent on this little run. And we did run into each guy. But then the final night, we played our set and then we went into her dressing room and we were all having a shot of tequila and like, and then we heard like, oh, can you guys come out for a minute? The Stones are, you know, want to do the photo. And we like, okay. And so we walk out, there they are. I'm bold enough to put my giant hand around Ron Wood's shoulder, like a jackass. But I was like, I'm going to take the opportunity right now.
Well done.
And then they take the photo with us and they went right on stage.
Wow.
Like, it was like, I can't believe they just did that. And now they're the Stones right there on the stage. That's weirdest, crazy. You know. But yeah,
that's so crazy. Yeah,
that's so amazing. Cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a crazy experience. There was a great story in the. Did you guys read the Keith Richards book?
Yeah, I read it. Yeah,
I have.
So the day that we met Keith, we were like in what they call a pipe and drape sort of dressing room situation, where like, because all the dressing rooms, each Stone has a room, and then Alanis had a room, and they sort of just put us in like a little area with a drape. So we're sitting in there, and we see down the corridor Keith walking with like five of his guys. And he's carrying this big walking stick with like leather and beads around the top. And he's walking along. And Dave, the other guitar player, he just sort of gets up and starts following him. We all just kind of went, okay, let's see where he's going. And so we went up to the stage, and he was chatting with all the guys at the back line. And it was still kind of like, it had rained the night before, and it was a little cloudy. It was the stadium outdoors. And so I see once again, Dave goes to make his move to introduce himself. And so we all kind of walk up, and we're like, hey, Keith, we're, you know, the Alanis band. Oh, and he's right. One love. And he starts shaking our hands, and he's got these big gnarly knuckles and everything. And he goes, and I thought, I just want to hear him say something that's Keith. And yeah, he goes, I just came out here to shake a stick at the weather. And like a shaman.
Yeah, like a shaman,
you know.
He does and, that. That's wow. a thing.
Yeah.
He does that.
Yeah. And then it didn't rain, of course, because Keith was the shaman. And then cut two, I'm reading the book, and he talked about the stick in the book. And I was like, hey, I saw the stick. Yeah, yeah. You know.
No, I know. That's a thing. Like he brings that thing. And I guess he performs some kind of ritual to make it not rain for shows. Yeah.
I don't know
how successful it is, but I'm sure it's, you know, I'm sure we can do the math on it.
Yeah, maybe there's a percentage of, you know, it worked that day.
Hey, Johnny Langdon's asking if you have any plans to reunite with Liz Phair. I forgot you had done some stuff with Liz.
Oh, you did Liz Phair too?
No, actually, no. What happened was Liz was going to be in Cat Power slot on this tour.
Oh, I see. I see.
But I think, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think there was something COVID related, maybe with a member of her family, I want to say, that there was some concern with... I can't remember, but she had to pull out of the tour.
It could be anything these days. You know, it's like people coming and going because, you know, grand opening, grand closing.
Actually worked on a Liz Phair record.
Oh, wow.
Mixing it.
Did you?
With Mike Shipley. When I first moved to LA, I was in the studio like every single day. And Record One, do you know that studio, Record One? I don't think it's...
I remember that place.
I think it's Dr. Dre's studio now in Studio City. But that was one of the projects we worked on. And we also worked on Hands Clean, the Alanis song. We did a single mix for that.
Oh, crazy. Was that with John Shanks? Or no, not John Shanks. Who worked on that record? I can't remember.
It was the dude that did... Glenn?
Oh.
That did all
the... Oh, did he do it?
Glenn Ballard?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's
no way.
Yeah, Glenn Ballard.
I didn't realize. Thank you. Because that record was finished when I got in the band. Like, that was kind of like, she just finished that record, and then we went out as the new band to kind of promote it and whatever.
I think it was already mixed for the album. I think the album was already out. This was like a radio version that Mike Shipley and I did.
Oh, cool. I didn't know we had that connection. That's so cool.
Yeah, that is cool. There you go. One more picture for you here, or a couple more.
Corey's done his research.
Do you know this guy?
Danny, that's in I think that's in Tel Aviv.
That's right, because the next one is you with Jason. Welcome to Israel.
Israel. So cool. that was like an emotional, like Danny. So I met Danny through our old guitar player Dave, and I knew he had played with Kelly. And
right, so this
Danny
this
moved
was
back
the-
to. Go ahead.
Sorry, I'll just tell everybody that's listening really quick. This is Danny Weisfeld, who was the other guitar player on my first tour with Kelly. So the guy that got fired, it was because he went over to Danny during the show and threatened to change his patches while he was in the middle of a solo.
Hey, is that frowned upon? Because I do that all the time.
No, that's the thing. He was only joking. He was only joking, but Kelly saw him doing that, and there was already some other things that were building up to this moment.
Oh, really?
Going on with the other guitar player. So she thought he was seriously trying to sabotage the show.
Oh, boy.
And she just, that sort of sent her off into a bad space while we were doing the show. But it was Danny's pedal board that Dwayne was trying to, or pretending that he wasn't going to do it. He's just joking, and I believe that.
And that cost him a gig. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So go ahead, finish your story, Jason. Sorry.
Oh, I don't remember what I was talking about.
Well, you said you met Danny. How did you meet Danny?
Yeah. Well, Danny I met through our old guitar player, Dave, with Alanis, because he was friends with him. And then when Danny moved back to Israel, we were in Europe on a month-long European run. And right in the middle, there was all this unrest in Israel with missiles being fired and things like that. And we were saying to Alanis, well, do you still want to do the gig in Tel Aviv? It was going to be our last show. And she was like, I don't know. Well, and I said, you know what? I actually know someone. Let me email him. And I emailed Danny, and it was kind of him. It was really valuable to hear from him and say, he was like, nah, you know, you should come. And the people that do come and don't cancel are like celebrated, you know, and
totally.
And that show was like one of the most exciting shows I've ever played, I think, because people were so appreciative. But our bass player, Cedric, at one point during the show, he comes over to me and he goes, did you see your sign? And I was like, what? He goes, you got a sign. I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, look. And they were holding up that some, you know, very sweet Israeli fans were saying, Jason, that's welcome so to Israel. Cool. And so at the end of the night, I was like, can I please have my sign? So that was hanging in my studio.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was very sweet.
Awesome. Yeah, when I was playing with Slash, we played Israel. Danny came to the show and he took me out for the best hummus ever.
Oh, amazing.
While I was there.
That's so cool.
We had some fun going out in the town and it was good to see him again.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's a real
nice dude. Yeah. It really is. It's such a weird thing because I remember that was the first time we'd been there and there was all this talk about whether or not you get your passport stamped and because there's so much controversy around it. And it was good to talk to Danny because he was like, you know what, man? The people that live here that want this to be cool, like, he's like, I have Palestinian friends. I have, you know, he's like, we're all just trying to live together. He said, the people out on the fringes that are, you know, causing all the problems they're the problem. The politicians are the problem.
It's such a shame.
And Danny was in the Kelly Clarkson band when we were supposed to play in Tel Aviv at the end of the European tour. And Kelly got nervous as the date was approaching because she's the American Idol. Right?
Yep.
That she may be a target or something.
Yeah.
So we pulled out of that show, but my wife had already bought tickets to meet me there. And so we just went off and had a laugh, and it was one of our best trips we've ever had.
That was a smart choice.
Going
that's great.
Israel and then going into Egypt and Jordan, and it was just insane. It was so good. So good.
My wife went to Jordan and loved it. I've never been to Jordan or Egypt. I'd love to go.
Yeah. Wow. You probably heard of Petra, right? Petra, Indiana Jones, the temple carved into the rock.
Incredible.
Yeah. That's right. It's just incredible. Insane. Like, if anyone ever has a chance to go, do it.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, yes, buses get bombed. And yes, and actually, when we were in Egypt, we went scuba diving in the Red Sea. And we saw after we left, like 10 days after we left, we saw our hotel on CNN had been blown up.
Damn.
Oh, whoa. My God.
But the bomb wasn't crazy. In our hotel. It was across the street. But the shockwave broke the windows in our hotel. So we would have still been okay. But the thing is, you know, and I say this to other people, is yes, there might be a bomb on a bus. But even if you're at the end of that block where the bus is, you're still going to be fine. So you literally have to be within like 30 feet of the bus, you know, what are the chances of that, right? So you should still do it, and don't let fear keep you from doing stuff.
There's enough stuff happening in our backyards these days. You know, it's mm-hmm. dangerous everywhere. It's just the way the world is.
Right.
I can't lock yourself in your house. Trust me, I try.
Well, it's a good point, though. Well, and buying guitars, clearly.
Yeah, exactly.
Reverb.com has been.
Yeah, it's ding dong. I got to go buy.
Oh, dude, buy now. No, it's funny that you guys have all traveled too. Like, I feel like there have been places where people said, oh, be careful there, you know, or the first time we went to Brazil and went to Rio, and I remember walking around going, this is amazing. I don't feel, you know, I don't feel the dangerousness. Obviously, there are areas. But there's areas of LA I wouldn't go to probably, you know, there's mm-hmm. like, but the one place I can say that I've ever been where we played early on, we played in Caracas in Venezuela.
Oh yeah. Wow. Been there. Todd and I've been there twice.
Yeah.
It's a trip, right? Like the festival was out in the countryside, but staying in Caracas, they told us, like, we stayed at this hotel and it was probably the nicest hotel in town, but it looked like it was still like 1978 when you're in the hotel, you know?
Right.
And they said, we were saying, oh, where's a good place to go, you know, go eat or whatever. And they were saying,
oh, no.
we suggest you stay in the hotel. And we went, and we all looked at you, you know, and they walk away and we look at each other and go, 10 minutes lobby? Yeah. Okay, cool. And
did you really venture out?
We walked out of the hotel and we got about two blocks down the street and we went, yeah, hotel? Yeah, let's go back to the hotel. Like it just,
yeah.
It was the first time I felt like there's nothing that looks inviting about this at all. It was a big city, wow. but it just looked really like, you know, for whatever reason.
A lot of places are like that. Even in Manila, they told us I would stay in the hotel.
I didn't go anywhere in Manila. I remember being there and they just said.
I'm not opposed to it if we have, like, you know, the right group of people to go and see stuff. I mean, even in Mexico City, it sounds crazy, but I remember going out with people and being like, wow, this is the best, you know, but
I love Mexico City.
It's a gigantic city, and gigantic cities mean exponentially more things can happen. So it's what it is what it is, but it can be an amazing experience at the same time.
For sure. Yep. For sure.
That's why we tour, to get to see all these great cities.
Right. Exactly.
Well, to get to see the hotels, the venues and the airports of these great cities.
I was trying to say
that's us in Jerusalem.
Oh, Jerusalem.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's a must, right? If you can go to Jerusalem, you know, on a day off, you have to go there once. Like, and Corey, I think you've been there a couple times. Actually, you were like our host.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'd never played there before, so that was my first time playing.
Oh, that's
the Israeli crowd, that Tel Aviv crowd
was a cool gig.
Awesome.
So
they're incredible, right?
Yeah.
Jason, are you like with Alanis in the last 20 years? Have you done most of those places? Because, you know, certain artists like to go around the world. Some artists are like, we just sort of stick to America and Europe or whatever. But
the lucky thing about her is that her record that was so internationally, you know,
accepted
that like I truly in the last 20 years have seen the world. Like it's unbelievable things that like I've gone. I mean, you start playing music and you think, oh, maybe someday I'll get to travel and tour. And then it happens and it's sort of different than maybe what you imagined. But then you also go like, wait, we're going where? And we're doing what? Yeah. And we're going to go to the Amazon and go on a day off and go up the Rio Negro and see like Amazonian tribe and like
that's way cool.
Swim with pink dolphins and like, don't worry, there's no piranhas around. Okay, let's do it. You know, and like stuff like that. And like you guys know too. Like
cool. You've been,
you know, and not just with Alanis. I actually got to go to Iraq with Vertical Horizon and do like a USO trip.
Shit.
And that was crazy. And just some of the things you get to do. Right? It's
Vertical Horizon is a great group. What's the main guy's name in that group again?
Matt. Matt very, Scannell.
Very talented guy.
Really talented. Yeah. Super nice guy. And like, it's funny. His thing is so, there was a manager friend that was a mutual friend and called me and said, hey, you know, Matt is a friend and he's looking for someone who can, play guitar, but he needs a singer. And I said, oh, okay. I love to sing. And so Matt called me and he goes, hey, can you just come over and bring an acoustic guitar? I said, sure. And I learned something and he just wanted to hear me sing. He's like, I know you can play just from what you do or whatever, but I need to know if you can sing these parts. And we sang together and he went, great. And we never rehearsed. I had like some charts and we played the first gig and that was that. And
cool.
And we just did a bunch of gigs but one of them wound up being like, he's, hey, would you want to go do this USO trip to Iraq? I think it was in 2010. So it's like troops were there, but it was drawing down but it was crazy.
I would definitely do that as well. Even as crazy as that sounds, I would definitely do that. Sounds nuts. What are you staying in when you're there? Like, you're not staying at the Four Seasons there. You're
funny story. You stay in on the bases, but in Baghdad, we stayed in Saddam Hussein's former palaces.
What?
Part of them were like. Truly a missile had gone through the top. It was like, you know, one portion of it was kind of like, well, we're not, you know, staying in there.
Don't go to the West Wing there. It's not there anymore.
Exactly. Pretty much. Yeah. But I have pictures. They're in my computer. I should have sent you some. Yeah, there's like,
nuts.
It was crazy. And we played for troops using like really bare bones. We had like those early Line 6 before the Helix came out, but we were running direct into a PA that was just sort of a throw and go PA, and we had in-ears and one guitar, and we just kind of like would play sets on these different basses and like flew over Baghdad in a helicopter, which was kind of crazy. But we were only supposed to fly from place to place. The day of the gig in Baghdad, we were going to fly in a helicopter, but the dust is a problem there. So the helicopters don't fly if there's a certain air quality or something. So they go, okay, so I guess we're just going to drive. And I went, wait, what? What do you mean we're going to drive? I heard we don't drive. Why are we driving? Driving?
God.
You know?
Then you're Tony Stark at the beginning of Iron Man, that scene.
So there's two full-on Humvees and two armored like SUVs with, you know, bulletproof, whatever, and these soldiers, and we all had to put on the flak jackets and the helmets, and me and the bass player sat in the back of a Humvee, and there's the guy in between us sticking out of the top with the machine gun, you know,
wow.
like this. And they said, no, we have a secured highway and we'll drive to the other base. It'll be fine. Which part of me was excited because I was like, I want to go out and see
totally
the town, but you can't really do that, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But, and was it predominantly desert and stuff you were driving through, or was it actually like
on that thing, we were in Baghdad, so we were kind of driving
in the highway, in the city,
in the town, kind of. Yeah, yeah. But otherwise, you're kind of in the middle of nothing. And yeah, it's fascinating.
That would be fascinating. Yeah.
It seems like a place that would open up as like a, if it ever was safe enough to be tourism, it would be like Egypt, because we were in this one base. And they said, if you go about 3 miles out in the desert, it's the home of Abraham. And I was like, the what? You know, right. It gets very biblical around there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting.
Wow. Yep. Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. It's just one of those things you just wish they could find a way to, you know, resolve all these things so we can all just kind of hang out. So we can put a TGI Fridays in Baghdad. Ruin the whole kind of,
exactly. You really need a Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the Starbucks around here? Well, my friend, it's been a blast.
Thanks for having me, you guys. It's great.
We have to make this an in-person thing at some point, somehow. Next time you're back in LA, we'll break bread.
Exactly. Or I'll be in Vegas next week if you guys
are right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I'm here when you're here, which sucks. Typical.
That's how it always goes, right?
I want to see you play. I've seen Jason play a few times, but I haven't seen you with Alanis, so I'd like to
we'll get my number from Corey and we'll
there you go.
Figure it out.
Yeah, awesome.
I'm jealous. I'd love to see that show. I've always wanted to see Alanis do her thing too, because it's what a discography she has now. What a playlist. I can just imagine.
By the way, Jason, do you know we covered Ironic on a Took record?
I do know it. It sounded amazing. Corey told me about it. Yeah. He hit me up, I think. He was like, do you think she'd be okay with it? I was like, yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because we have a video now that plays, because it's kind of an elaborate production this time, but there's like a pre-show little video history thing that plays. And one little montage is all of these people doing You Ought to Know on YouTube, all these different versions and like metal versions and like a cappella. Like it's funny. Like you don't really realize like all of that stuff that's out there.
Damn, we should have done that one.
I know. I was like, oh, I should have. if I knew that's what, because she didn't tell us about it until the, yeah. Well, we didn't know until the day. Well, they use Ironic a lot too, but we didn't even know that video was a thing until we got to rehearsals and it was already finished. But
that's so cool.
But yeah.
Wow.
No, you guys sound amazing. Everything I've heard you guys doing is like, you guys are, well, like I said in the beginning, man, there's something. I got to come up and drink more water in Canada or something and get that Canadian talent. So
you play with a few, it rubs off, I think.
I've kept meaning to ask you this. This is going to sound ridiculous, but you're not related to Pete Thorne, are you?
No, but Pete's a good friend of ours. No, yeah.
He's the greatest guy. And like, when I hear you speak, your voices are similar in a way.
We have that kind of like.
Actually, Pete is Took alumni because he
sat
for me on a Took gig. Yeah.
He filled in for Corey.
I went over to his studio before this tour because obviously Pete is the master of like everything gear. So like I'm that ass that called, that texted, hey, so have you tried this thing? What do you think of this? You know, like,
we all do.
Driving it.
We all
thank God.
I do it. Okay, I'm like, hey, dude, what's that Doug Pinnock Tech 21 pillow like, panel like? Oh, dude, it's the best. Yeah, he's the guy to ask anything, really. Yeah.
And he couldn't be nicer about it. Like, I thought I was going to drive him out of his mind. He's like, come over to the studio. I was like, really? Okay. And, you know.
He's the best. Crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now he's got the he has what you call the non-regional diction. Once Canadians get their accent dumbed down, they can basically host the news. That's what I love.
You guys are like Todd.
Yeah, but you guys all drop into it.
Like, you know, they got that really low.
There's a made for television sound to the voice.
Yeah, low voice to it. Hello, yeah. Today,
you guys all have that. You could all drop into your Canadian thing. Alanis does it too. it's always that. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We're not sure why, but we are always sorry. Yeah.
We're always sorry.
Does she ever say giver? Does she ever say giver?
I think giver? that might be a prairie thing.
She's, come on, guys, let's give her.
Come on, guys.
You know what it means? Means like let's give her shit.
Oh, interesting. She's an Ottawa girl, so I wonder if that's Ottawa thing.
In different. You can use it in past tense as well, like we gave her last night, or we're about to give her, we're giving her.
Given
her. We're really drinking related. That's usually where
it's a kind of party word, I think.
Yeah,
it's a party thing, yeah.
Yeah. But the
our first Tuke album was called Giver.
I don't know what the Ottawa slang would have been, but that is far away from where we grew up.
Well, she definitely has the A and the what do you think? A or
the Ontario,
a lot of that. You know.
It's basically all the Grassy Junior High voices,
right?
That show, yeah.
Boy, it's funny where I come from. If I hang out with my old friends, we all just fall into like, oh, dude, totally,
yeah,
oh,
yeah, God, yeah, yeah, yeah,
you know,
exactly, yeah. Well, it's like when if you have any Australian friends or Scottish friends or English friends that live in the U.S., as soon as they get around other people from their neck of the woods, it's off. Like, you're just kind of like, just go off into their own, accents get stronger and thicker, and you're like, oh, okay. So it happens with Canadians.
My wife's
Californians.
Yeah, my wife's from Brooklyn. If we go to Brooklyn, she hangs on to a little of it, but if we go to New York, I hear it. I'm like, oh.
It comes out like, boom. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Everyone likes to give her once in a while.
Everyone likes to give her once in a while. That's true, Chantel. You're not lying.
Oh, I didn't see that. What is it?
French name like Chantel.
It said, everyone likes to give her once in a while.
You gotta
fucking give her, right?
Gotta give her.
Yeah.
There was a lot of
people guys.
We won't keep you. We know it's your day off, and I'm sure there's lots of things you'd like to do up in
sunny
California.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We'll cross paths soon enough, for sure.
I hope so, man. I hope so. It's good to see you guys and good to talk. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thanks, Jason.
Right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks
Chantel.
Thanks very much, Jason. Rob. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we'll see you next week.